It's March Madness time, listeners, and Cinderella is looking for that glass slipper so she can put it on and win a championship. Which NCAA team is going to be that Cinderella team? Listeners, let me and the Mad Mike roll up our sleeves and break it down for you. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please park my fresh as we bring you all new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show, listeners. Today is Monday, March 25th, 2019, and this show airs live every Monday at 1 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, SoundCloud, CastBox, Pocket Cast. Yes, we are all on those social sites right now, so please hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer, you can always shoot them through email to Lloyd@parkmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. Me and Mad Mike are also on Twitter and Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, LLOYD. Be sure to hit that follow button, and we have a great show for you today. Listeners, we are going to talk NCAA 2019 tournament bracket basketball. It's me and Mad Mike are going to give you our picks, who we think is going to go to the Elite Eight, the Final Four, and win a championship. And we're going to give you our overall record on all the picks that we've made of the 64 games that have been played in this tournament. Also, listeners, we're going to talk some Major League Baseball as the season starts this week for both New York teams, the Mets and Yankees. And we want to talk a little bit of football as the great tight end Rob Gronkowski has retired from the sport of football. So as always, listeners, let's buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from today. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
What's up, Lloyd? I'm down in Phoenix in Arizona. Came to, you know, I guess, see the remaining, the final spring training games out here on this side of the world.
Yes, Major League Baseball is starting this week. I'm excited. We're going to talk some baseball later in the show, but let's get to this NCAA 2019 tournament bracket, Mad Mike. Now, this is the first time on the show that we're actually doing an NCAA bracket. And listeners, me and Mad Mike are actually doing pretty well. We're going to break it all down for you. But at this particular moment, I am 33-11. And Mad Mike, what are you like, 33-9 or something like that? Either way, listeners, we're like plus 15, plus 20. So Mad Mike is actually in a bracket. I guess a bracket where you can make money depending on how well you do. I just did it for craps and giggles, just for the show. But I'm telling you right now, listeners, thus far, the two games of this tournament, okay, was Duke and UCF, which was an excellent game, right? And then Tennessee played
Iowa,
which went to overtime. Okay, so right now, my Cinderella pick was Murray State, and Murray State got knocked off by Florida State, Mad Mike, in which when I watched that game, Mad Mike, Florida State just had too many big men for Murray State to deal with. And Florida State was just getting so many second chance opportunities against Murray State, but at least I got a chance to see Ja Morant play, and that kid is special, Mad Mike.
Yeah, I mean, not for nothing, but Zion can do whatever he wants. I don't think in one game, I don't think there's anybody throughout this tournament that's going to electrify the fans or just, you know, average watchers like Ja did in that first game. He was unbelievable. He was unstoppable, sensational. And even Saturday night against Florida State, I mean, that first half he had, yeah, you know, the numbers didn't look so good at the end of the game. He didn't shoot it too well. But that first half he had was absolutely, you know, special. He just didn't have the help. You could just see where a top program like Florida State, well, at least top program this year, you know, just is so much more, you know, has so much more talent. They have so much more depth where Murray State relies on him. And then, you know, you were just hoping that, you know, two or three other guys really stepped up. It never happened.
His play may have actually risen his draft stock. I mean, they know most people have Zion Williams and R.J. Barrett going 1-2 with Ja Morant going 3. This could have very well pushed him up, definitely ahead of R.J. Barrett and possibly ahead of Zion Williams, Mad Mike.
You know, I'd like to say that, but at the same time, and I know Zion gets a lot of the credit, but not for nothing, R.J. Barrett got the game-winning rebound and putback. So,
he did.
You know, he showed, yeah, you know what I mean? He showed a little moxie this week, too, this weekend, too. So, I don't know. I think from a flash, from a substance, I think for all the people that questioned if Ja was doing this simply because he was playing against lesser teams, I think those questions were answered. I think people came away knowing that, you know, this guy can do more against more talented players. But, yeah, I think RJ, you know, showed himself very well so far in the tournament as additionally.
Now, of the teams that were highly rated, man, Mike, what was your team that you felt was the biggest disappointment as far as a team that you thought would go further than they actually did?
I'm going to tell you it was Mississippi State. I'm very big when it comes to tournament time. And, you know, I know a lot of people like to look at strength of schedule. Just to give you a quick analysis, I don't like strength of schedule as much as others because, for example, Syracuse had a good strength of schedule. Why? Because they play in the ACC, Virginia, Duke, UNC, teams like that, Florida State, they boost up your strength of schedule with how good they are. So even though you're a bad team, like I didn't think Syracuse was a very good team, but like I just told you, because their strength of schedule is boosted, a lot of people like them, thought that they play a lot better. I know Kansas is the one. Kansas had the number one strength of schedule in the entire country, and to get beat up like by Auburn the way they did, a huge disappointment. But for me, it was Mississippi State, man. Mississippi State, I like top 10 defenses, and I like teams that shoot free throws well, because to me, that's how you win in college, right? During the tournament, you get into that bonus, you hit your free throws, your one-on-ones, and you get stops. And for Liberty to come out and beat them in a 12-5 matchup, Liberty. You know, I couldn't even tell you when I saw LIB, I'm like, who is LIB? Long Island, Brooklyn? Or you know what I mean? Like, to me personally. So, for me, it was Mississippi State, man. It was Mississippi State. I didn't have them beating Duke in the Sweet 16, but, you know, you can't lose that game to Liberty, not when you're boasting a top 10 defense.
You know, Matt Mike, you want to know who my disappointment was? And my disappointment was Arizona State losing. Not Arizona. Believe it or not, my disappointment was, even though it wasn't your typical higher rated team beating a higher seeded team beating a lower seeded team, I was expecting a little bit more for Villanova, man, Mike.
You know, I wasn't, man. But go ahead.
I guess because they came out and won the Big East title, and I tell you, that kid they have from Villanova, I can't think of his name last night. I think he plays center for those guys.
Oh, Keith Booth?
Not Booth. I don't think it's Booth. Oh, man. I'm sorry, listeners. I should have my homework done on this. Prudence? I may have to look this up.
Keep going. I'll check it out for you.
But I was expecting a little bit more, even though they lost to Purdue, and Purdue is, they were third.
The center is, I'm sorry to cut you off. So they have Pascal.
Pascal. That's what I'm thinking of. Pascal, very talented basketball player. Listen, is this young man, and I don't know if he's a senior or if he's going to, if he's not a senior, if he's entering the NBA draft, but if he is, he would, this kid is going to be a first-round pick. First-round pick. I was expecting a little bit more out of Villanova, Mad Mike. I thought they would, you know, kind of get past Purdue, and I had them facing off against Tennessee, and Tennessee beating them. But I was expecting Villanova to sneak past Purdue, and I was a little bit disappointed they didn't. The whole Auburn-Kansas game, although I did pick Kansas to beat Auburn, Auburn has played solid basketball. And it really was like a toss-up. You know, that was one of those games that I was going back and forth, Mad Mike, as far as who's to pick. And it was almost like you flip a coin as, you know, as who you end up going with. So I had Kansas beating Auburn, but it did surprise me that Auburn ended up beating Kansas.
You know, I'm more shocked at the fact that if you think about all the people that have Tennessee and their Final Four and some even in the national title, it's amazing to me that Bruce Pearl in Tennessee, Bruce Pearl at Auburn, has kind of turned this program around to a point where now they're nationally respected, and Tennessee is back to being, you know, respected nationally as well. And you don't see it often when a team like Tennessee fires a coach like Bruce Pearl, and then, you know, they both go fall on hard times, and now it's actually kind of cool to see them both, you know, I guess ascending simultaneously. It's freaking amazing. And not only that, they're both in the SEC conference. So you could see Auburn and Tennessee actually becoming, you know, two powerhouses behind Kentucky, and them having that battle for a long time to come.
And I was also disappointed in Wisconsin losing to Oregon, Matt Mike.
I had Oregon, believe it or not.
Did you?
Yeah, but here's the thing. A lot of people don't realize Oregon is one of those sneaky good teams. They've been injured for a lot of the year, and they're actually got healthy during the Pac-12 tournament. And I just, you know, I'm one of those guys that I think that, you know, these lower teams, people forget how good they anticipated they would be, and they don't take into account things like injuries. And like Duke, look, if Zion doesn't get hurt, Duke is probably, what, a one-loss, two-loss team? But people kind of like, you know, six losses for Duke, five losses for Duke, are they a one seed? And Zion reminds you during the tournament. Well, that's how I looked at Oregon. Like, you know, this is a team that's a top 25 talent, and we forgot about that.
Well, this is the one thing about NCAA basketball is that even though teams are lower seeded or higher seeded, that doesn't necessarily equate to wins. That's why you have your Cinderella teams. You know, you get a team that doesn't have a superstar. I was watching, I don't know if it was the end game show, Matt Mike, but it was Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley, and they were just talking, and Kenny Smith was saying how there's only a few handful of teams that when their star players don't play well, they actually still win, because he was bringing up Gonzaga. Because Gonzaga's star player only had 6 points, but Gonzaga still pulled out that win. And he was bringing up the point that it was impressive that Gonzaga was able to do that with their star player only scoring 6 points. And he only took like 6 shots.
I mean, they're deep, though. And they're just to give you an idea of how good Gonzaga is, I think Duke was the prohibitive favorite to win, you know, win it all. And Gonzaga was only like a point or a point and a half behind them as you know, as a favorite. So it's not like they don't have the talent. I mean, we're over here like, oh my God, Duke almost lost. But, you know, Gonzaga's right there with Duke. They can easily pull this out. I mean, you know, if we're being honest, I mean, you know, they're loaded, dude. Brandon Clark went off for like 30 some points. I think he had the high for the entire tournament, and it wasn't like it was a bad night. It was a Kevin Durant type night, right? I think he was something like 15 for 20 or something, Lloyd. It was ridiculous.
Listen, not for not just not to move so far forward, Matt Mike, but I have my two teams facing off for the championship. I have Gonzaga against North Carolina.
Really?
Yeah.
Not mad at you.
But I mean, let's rewind back. So some of the key matchups, Mad Mike, going into the Sweet 16, okay, you have Gonzaga versus Florida State. Tough matchup. Now things get interesting. Okay, who do you have winning that game between Gonzaga and Florida State?
Well, I have the Zags reaching the Elite Eight in my bracket, so obviously I have Gonzaga beating Florida State.
Okay, I have Gonzaga knocking off Florida State too, but I also had Gonzaga playing against Murray State on my bracket. And obviously Florida State foiled that. So, you know, I need for Gonzaga to beat Florida State in order for me to, you know, look like a genius right now, Mad Mike.
Yeah, I actually have it Florida State, Murray State. Florida State Gonzaga right now. So I'm pretty well off there.
Okay, so now the other matchup is Texas Tech versus Michigan. And Michigan is another team that's played solid basketball. Surprisingly solid basketball. They won. Did they lose the Big Ten championship?
They lost the Big Ten championship to Michigan State. Yeah. Right.
Good game, by the way, listeners. Very good game. But I have Michigan beating Texas Tech. Now, here's the thing. At some point, Mad Mike, I'm thinking, like, do I want to go back and make some changes here? But I think I'm going to stick with Michigan beating Texas Tech, Mad Mike.
Well, you over here talking about one of your Cinderellas. My Cinderella was actually Arizona State. I just thought they were going to ride that wave, that Bobby Hurley wave and emotion after beating St. John's. By the way, hometown, St. John's, you guys suck. Very upset. That was my Cinderella. So I do have Michigan advancing past to the Elite Eight as well.
All right. So look at that, listeners. Me and Mad Mike have agreed. Okay.
Well, I think Michigan is the best defensive team in the tournament. And when you have 2 7-footers that can do what they do off the pick and roll, being able to step out, play pick and pop and roll to the hoop the way they do, I think they're going to be extremely hard to beat for anybody in the country.
All right. So now sticking to the theme and that Western bracket. All right. Who do you have coming out of there between Gonzaga and Michigan?
Michigan, I have in my Final Four.
All right, I have Gonzaga in my Final Four. So it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. Now we have LSU versus Michigan State, Mad Mike, which is another solid matchup. Who do you have winning that game?
I actually do have LSU playing Michigan State in my bracket. And I have Michigan State coming out, man. I love their kid, Winston. I love the way that big men shoot the three. And I just seen too many LSU games this year where they just go minutes without getting a bucket. They'll build big leads. They let teams back in it, or, you know, they fall behind and then they're forced to chip away. So, I'm riding with Michigan State.
And I have Michigan State as well advancing to the Elite Eight. Michigan State is a solid basketball team to piggyback off of what Mad Mike said. They're big, shoot the threes very well. They move the ball around, play very excellent team basketball. And most college teams do. That's why the scores are so low. But Michigan State has been a solid basketball team all season. And for that reason, I'm going with Michigan State as well. So, listen, once we get to this Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, very good matchups. This NCAA tournament, Mad Mike, in my opinion, has been a very good tournament thus far. Very good. Although there hasn't been a lot of surprises. Okay, it's been very good basketball games. Very good basketball games. Very good. So it's going to be interesting to see how things pan out. And listeners, look, college basketball is a fundamentally style-played form of basketball. It's nothing like the NBA. Nothing like the NBA. In college basketball, I say sharing is caring because that's what they do. You get your stars that get their rocks off, and what I mean by rocks, they'll get their points. Okay, but even the stars pass the ball. It's not like the NBA. It's not like the NBA. So it's going to be interesting. Mad Mike, so who do you have as your Final Four teams?
Michigan, Duke. And then I have Kentucky and Virginia.
Wow. Wow. I have Gonzaga and Duke. And I might change that because I think Michigan State might beat Duke. And although Duke did struggle against UCF, sometimes it happens. Like Tennessee struggled in their game, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Tennessee, you know, is going to struggle moving forward. You know, just because Tennessee struggled against Iowa doesn't mean that Tennessee is going to struggle against Purdue.
That's true. I mean, but Tennessee did have, the last month or so, last 5 weeks, Tennessee's got like five losses or something like that. So I don't know how much. I like Tennessee. I have them in the Elite Eight, I believe it is. And, I'm a fan. Like I said, it's amazing how they've turned it around.
Yeah, so your Elite Eight, who do you have in your Elite Eight? Before we go to, I'm sorry, I'm kind of jumping all over the place, listeners. But in your Elite Eight, who do you have in your Elite Eight, Mad Mike?
So I had Duke, Michigan State, Gonzaga, Michigan. I went chalk. I have UK and UNC, Kentucky and UNC, and I had Tennessee and UVA. So basically, just from what I've seen this year throughout the season, I just think that there were teams that were just head and shoulders better than everybody. And I think that's how they view this year's brackets. And I do think that the eight I have are just absolutely head and shoulders, no question, better than all the other talent. The one that was hard for me was UNC losing. I believe I had UNC losing to Kentucky. But when this season started, man, I remember that opening night. It was Duke, Kentucky. I think they were ranked 2 and 3 in the country. And just the way they played each other, I know Duke had ran them out early. I was just like, man, these two are going to be the best two teams at the end of the year. And both teams kind of played like it, man.
Yeah, so in my Elite Eight, I got Duke and Michigan State coming out of the East. I got Gonzaga and Michigan coming out of the West. Then I have Kentucky and North Carolina coming out of the Midwest, and Tennessee and Virginia coming out of the South.
Oh, so we have this, it's identical.
Yes, we have identical.
Identical Elite Eight.
And now Final Four, you had who coming into your Final Four?
Duke, Michigan. So I had Michigan beating Gonzaga. I had Duke beating Michigan State. I had Virginia, I believe, beating Tennessee, and then I had Kentucky beating North Carolina.
All right. In my Final Four, I have Duke beating Michigan State. I have Gonzaga knocking off Michigan. I have North Carolina beating Kentucky. And I have Tennessee beating Virginia. But I might switch that pick based off the information that Matt Mike just gave myself and the listeners. I might switch that pick. But every time I switch a pick, listeners, they end up losing. So maybe I might just keep this pick. All right? And then, obviously, the championship. Man, Mike, you had...
Kentucky beating Duke.
Okay, and I have North Carolina beating Duke, although I might switch it to Gonzaga. I might switch it to Gonzaga. So I might have North Carolina versus Gonzaga and North Carolina winning.
For the record, I just want to point out that the only reason that I have a Gonzaga bias where I won't pick them to win is simply because I watched both losses to St. Mary's this year. And, you know, it's just like the reason I picked Murray State over Marquette. I had the luxury of watching a smaller team like St. John's, who really struggled to finish the year, run Marquette out of the building with small ball. And I was like, man, that's exactly what Murray State does. There's no way they're going to keep up, especially with electric talent. You know, Shamari Ponds is no John Morant, but he's electric. And so, and then saying that, that's why I'm not a big believer in Gonzaga, because I saw how a system, half-court system offense, slowed them down and beat them up with the big men. And I just think the same thing with Michigan. I see Michigan as being a pick and pop. They have the two 7-footers. can go both ways, and I don't think Gonzaga is going to be able to play with that.
You know what? You know what I was thinking, man, Mike. I think the one thing to kind of not to jump off of those two teams that you were talking about. When I think about it, the one thing that gives Duke problems are teams that have good big men.
Yeah,
and UCF had Taco. I don't know the young man's last name.
Taco Fall.
And it wasn't that easy for Zion Williams.
No, because you know what? People got to think about it. You know, when you think about Zion, yeah, he plays above the rim. But from a height standpoint, think of Zion Williams. Think of that matchup kind of like a Charles Barkley versus, you know, a Pat Ewing from a size standpoint. Of course, Charles was stronger than everybody. And he didn't play as above the rim, but he had, you know, Charles at times had trouble getting the ball up over, you know, the taller guys. That's just what Zion is going to have to deal with when he's forced to play in the middle for Duke.
I actually seen him take a damn jump shot.
Yeah, a couple three-pointers too.
You know?
But, you know, that's why I think they're going to have, I picked them to come out of it, but I think they're going to have loads of trouble with Michigan. Really, really, really do. I mean, I know I didn't pick Michigan, but Michigan's, for me, like, you know that one team you don't pick, but if they said, who's the one team you didn't pick that you think can win it all, Michigan would be my team.
Yeah, like I was saying, any team with good big men, and, you know, Michigan State has good big men, Michigan has good big men, you know, Gonzaga has good big men. I think those are the teams that have always, or this season, has posed threats to the Duke Blue Devils.
Yeah, North Carolina.
Yeah,
for
North
example.
Carolina, big men. Yep. And not for nothing, man, Mike. North Carolina should have beat them twice.
Yeah. I mean, three times.
I'm sorry. Yeah, they should have beat them three times. They basically, the last time they played them, they had that game won.
Yeah.
They had that game won. They should have beat Duke three times, but you know what? Sometimes it's better to lose. And then when you see this team again, you finish off the right way. And all of they did losing a championship. I mean, they lost before. How the hell did Duke end up playing in North Carolina in the game before the championship, Mike? How did that even happen?
I think because Duke had those losses, man. They had like a stretch when Zion was out where they had like three or four losses. And it dropped them down in the ACC standings.
Okay.
So they ended up, you know, I want to tell you, UNC was a 2 seed and Virginia was the 1, and Duke fell to like the 3 seed or something because of those losses. And they ended up in the same side or same bracket, whatever you want to call it, as UNC.
You know, there's some young men that's playing solid basketball, but the one young man that stood out outside of Ja Morant, man, Mike, that I actually had the opportunity to see play, that I really didn't get to see it play a lot, was a young man from UCF by the name of Dawkins.
Oh, Aubrey Dawkins.
Aubrey Dawkins. Played a hell of a basketball game against Duke. And he missed the final second tipping that would have gave UCF the win. And he would have been a hero. And that's tough for a young man to experience that. But he played solid basketball in that game, man, Mike.
Yeah.
Really good size. He can shoot the three. Knew he could take the ball to the bucket. You know, listeners, this is the first time. I mean, I've always paid attention to college basketball, but this is the first year that I've literally paid attention to college basketball, where I watch tons of games.
It's not the first time where he's paid attention. It's the first time he's been invested in college basketball.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Why have I been invested? Good old New York Knicks. That's why. But it's going to be interesting to see how the top three picks pan out, man, Mike. Listen, we both say that RJ Barrett is a more complete NBA-ready basketball player. Okay, then if you ask me, man, Mike, I would say Ja Morant is a more complete NBA basketball player than Zion Williams. After watching this young man play, he sees the floor very well, man, Mike. Very well. He can take you off the dribble. He has a jump shot. And he sees the floor really well. And I think that transitions into him being a solid NBA point guard. Will he be a star? I don't know. But he's going to be a solid basketball player in the NBA. His game transitions really well to the NBA. And obviously you could say the competition that they've played or whatever the case may be. What do you say about that? Still doesn't matter. You can look at somebody and tell when somebody has the goods.
That's why I was so excited to watch it. Like last year you had what's the kid's name? Went to the Atlanta Hawks, played in Oklahoma, Trae Young. And we all kept saying, man, I want to see what he does in the tournament because these guys kind of finished kind of slow and whack. And I was just like, man, I got to see this. I have to see what he does in the tournament. Does he light it up? And he didn't light it up. They went out in one game, and you were like, man, we knew they didn't belong. And then I was just like, yo, I got to see what Ja does. I have to see if he's going to, hold his own against higher level talent. And let me tell you something, man. Think about it for a second. It's not like they played weak teams. He played the number 5 seeded Marquette, and he played the number 4 seeded Seminole. And he shined. He shined. Yeah, they lost yesterday, but he shined.
And he didn't play greedy basketball, Mad Mike. He played team basketball and still shined.
Yep.
This young man is a special talent.
But there's some other guy. Like I mentioned, a kid from Gonzaga. Don't want to sell Carson Edwards, short point guard out in Purdue. He absolutely destroyed, Villanova on Saturday night. There's been a slew of breakouts this year. I'm, like you said, for one, am excited. Cam Reddish hit the game winner. Not the game winner, but the game tie-in. He brought Duke within one with his three-pointer when they were down.
That was a big shot.
You know what I mean?
Right,
so it's not like it was only Zion, showing himself, on Sunday night. So it was definitely other guys that were just like looking, I'm ready for the big moment too. It was good to see.
So listen, this is not the end of the world if the Knicks don't get the number one pick. I know we're all in love with this Zion Williams, New York Knicks marriage. But Mike, if the Knicks don't fall out of 3, I will be okay. If the Knicks pick 1, 2, or 3, they're getting them a solid basketball player.
Yeah, I agree
just
with
think
you.
If they fall out of 3, Mad Mike, if they go 4, 5, 6, I can easily see them drafting some European person, man.
I'll say this, man. I hope that it's 1, just for the simple fact that you don't have to choose. If it's 1, we know it's going to be Zion. Whether we think Ja is a better player for this team, personally, I think that Zion will definitely land you one of the top free agents, just off the hype of the name. But listen, in the end of the day, think about when I look at Ja now, I look at what D'Angelo Russell is doing for the Brooklyn Nets, actually. I said Lakers because I'm thinking of what he just did to the Lakers, eliminating them on Friday night. But yeah, you know what I mean? Sidetrack, because I do that a lot. How amazing is it on the same day that Lonzo Ball announces that he was defrauded by his father's friend for $1.5 million in the Big Baller Brand business? D'Angelo Russell is knocking the Lakers out of playoff contention.
How crazy is that?
Poetic justice, huh?
Yep. So to speak. And with that being said, listeners, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some football. We're going to talk some baseball. So we got a lot more to talk about. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. The first half of the show, listeners, was focused on the NCAA 2019 tournament bracket, which we have a lot more to discuss that on the shows moving forward. But Mad Mike, let's move on to some other topics. And real quick, before we get on to Rob Gronkowski announcing his retirement from the sport of football, I just want to bring up a report about Odell Beckham Jr., okay? And Ian Rappaport reported that Odell Beckham Jr. saw Antonio Brown receive added money without added new years upon being traded to the Raiders. And it's his understanding that Odell wants the same thing from the Cleveland Browns, Mad Mike. So before he even gets to the organization, before training camp even starts, there's reports that he's asking for more money on top of the money he just got. He just signed the contract. And he's asking for more money. I wanted to get your thoughts on that, Mad Mike, because obviously, listen, but before I get your thoughts, I also want to say, Dave Gettleman, you need to shut the heck up. And I don't want to use the word heck. All right, put your foot in your mouth, man. Put your foot in your mouth. Because the more you talk, the stupider you sound. And I hate to call anybody stupid, but he sounds stupid, Mad Mike. Just say you traded Odell Beckham Jr. to make this team better. Don't give asinine reasons as to why you traded him.
Yeah, before I go on to the Odell and reel me back in to make sure I give you my feeling on that, that's interesting news. The problem I have with him is don't come out and say you don't have to tell us what the plan is, but then come and tell us why you traded Odell. You know what I mean? Like, if you ain't going to be honest with us, if you're not going to tell us anything, then don't tell us anything at all. Because if you go into everything that he said this offseason, he's been nothing but a liar, right? We had that. We had the no-holds-barred conversation with Eli Manning. Well, Lord, it looks to me like Eli Manning won. Don't it look like that to you?
Yeah, he's defending Eli Manning. Columns. He's defending
him. He didn't take a pay cut. They moved on with Landon Collins and got nothing. They traded Olivier Vernon. Beckham goes. So, like, yeah, like you said, man, just shut up. Like, if you ain't gonna don't tell us something that you feel makes you look good, and then don't tell us everything else. You know what I mean? Like, that's, if you want to plead the fifth.
I don't hate this trade, man, Mike. But the more he talks, it makes it look a lot worse than what it already is. Just shut up already, man.
That's I'm with you there. That's how I feel there.
Just shut up.
As far as Odell asking for more money, this just goes back to the original conversation we had. He's never going to be happy. And what I mean by that is Odell Beckham is always, every year he's going to want to be the highest paid. It was just like, you know, Darrell Revis. Darrell Revis always felt like he was outperforming his contract. Every year he wanted to renegotiate his contract. He would hold out. I think Odell Beckham's going to be the same way. Odell Beckham sees what Antonio Brown got, you know, and now he feels like, wait a minute. So I'm not making the same money as these guys anymore. He sees as a matter of fact, Julio Jones just got that 4-year, $80 million extension, $60 million guaranteed. 4 years, $60 million guaranteed is more money than Odell Beckham. So think about that for a second. So, you know, Atlanta, yeah, it's a risky deal for them, but they've done this before. People forget that they drafted Calvin Ridley, right? And it's the same thing when they got Julio Jones to begin with. They drafted Julio and ushered him in while they maintained loyalty to Roddy White, while Roddy White started to age and get, you know, find his way out of the league. They're doing the same thing now, except, you know, they're going to pay their guy. They're going to pay him now, and then in a few years, they're going to have to pay Calvin Ridley when they're showing Julio the door. That's how business works, and that's why Atlanta's so respected around the league. Odell has to realize that. You've never even played it down for these guys. You, and we could call him the best receiver on the team. We have no idea if he's going to be the best receiver or the more accomplished receiver out of the group, because in the end of the day, maybe he opens the field up for Landry more, right? Or David Njoku more. And all of a sudden, we know Baker Mayfield, like we said before, he's not going to bend to anybody's will. Baker's going to spread the ball around if he thinks he's going to throw to the open man.
So if Odell is getting doubled and somebody else is open, you ain't getting the ball, Odell. You're not going to be force-fed like you was in New York.
Correct.
But you're not going to.
You know, if you're Cleveland, you have something to think about now, because the one thing the Giants know is an unhappy Odell, an underpaid Odell, he's a problem.
But my thing, man, Mike, is with Odell doing this, it makes it seem like what Gettleman was doing made some sort of sense. But then Gettleman comes out and opens up his big mouth, and he looks so moronic. He sounds so moronic, I should say. And then he starts defending Eli Manning again. Come on, stop it. Stop with this, man. Put your foot in your mouth, shut up, and hit a home run in this NFL draft. Because by him talking, Mad Mike, it makes the deal seem a lot worse than what a lot of people already perceive it to be. Because they're like, really? This is why you traded him? Really?
Well, you know, what's the other thing that people say? If you have to defend what you're doing, that means you're doing something wrong. You know what I mean? Think of that. That's what people always say. Well, if you didn't do something wrong, you wouldn't have to defend yourself. So, you know, that's what he's doing now. So just don't come out and defend yourself. Show some confidence in what you're doing by staying quiet and letting people do whatever it is that
right,
people want to do.
Form an opinion based on your actions moving forward.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? Do, like I said, hit a home run in the NFL draft. And people will be like, oh, okay, well, that Odell. Listen, you really can't see. At the moment, it seems like Cleveland just put a wool over the Giants' eyes and, you know what I'm saying, and just took sheep from out there, you know, from out their barn. But you really can't tell if the Giants won this deal overall, Matt Mike, until after the draft. Okay, and the players that they pick, how they turn out. As NFL ball players, this isn't something that you could say Cleveland won this or the Giants won this. Because the only player that you have that the Giants got out of this deal was Jabril Peppers, and even he's on the young side. And he hasn't possibly come into his own yet. So it just seems like Cleveland won this deal because you have a player that has over 5,000 receiving yards and is obviously one of the best receivers in the NFL. And that's what you see more than anything else. And that's why you say Cleveland won this deal. That's why everybody's saying is Cleveland won this deal. Because you have unknown commodities that the Giants have in return for that. Outside of Jabril Peppers, everything else is draft picks. But Dave Gettleman, do us a favor and just keep your mouth closed and do your job. You already, you know, made some stupid decisions in Carolina, and I wasn't a fan of him even being here in New York. And now this is going on. But anyway, Matt Mike, let's move on to Rob Gronkowski, which is a bit of a shock to me, and I'm pretty sure it's a bit of a shock to New England, the Patriots and New England fans. He announced his retirement from the NFL via Instagram yesterday. And after 9 seasons with the New England Patriots, he's putting an end to a career in which, in my opinion, he transcended the tight end position and was one of the league's most colorful personalities. And, you know, New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady posted his reaction on Instagram, which I saw. And Gronkowski called Patriots owner Robert Kraft to inform him of his decision to retire. All right, Gronkowski has 79 touchdown receptions since he joined the Patriots as a second-round draft choice in 2010. He led the NFL. He had 10 or more touchdown receptions in 5 seasons, which is the most by a tight end in NFL history. And in all, Gronkowski played 115 regular season games, totaling 521 receptions. Yes, I did my homework, listeners. For 7,861 yards, and he also played in 16 playoff games, in which he had 81 receptions for 1,163 yards and 12 touchdowns. All records for a tight end in NFL. And his 12 postseason touchdown receptions are top for second most in NFL history among all players. Behind Jerry Rice, who had 22. And he has 4 100-yard receiving games in playoffs, tying him with Vernon Davis and Keith Jackson for the most by NFL tight end. But I think, man, Mike, that one of the most overlooked parts of Gronkowski's game was his powerful blocking, which made that rare. Because, you know, nowadays you get all these hybrid tight ends that can't block. And he was able to block, and he was an excellent blocker and an excellent pass catcher. And listeners, I'm not a fan of the Patriots at all. I can't stand them. But you got to give credit where credit is due. As a sports fan, and I have nothing but utmost respect for Rob Gronkowski's accomplishments as an NFL player, man, Mike.
I'm a Jet fan, so I'm biased. But, one of the greatest, most certainly one of the greatest, but good riddance.
Listen, that helps the Jets out. And listen, he did battle some injuries. He had some concussion problems. And you're seeing a lot more NFL players retire at early ages, more so now than ever before.
Well, you know, because one of those reasons is because the money, silly money. I mean, if you're talking about, look at Odell Beckham, for example. He made $21.5 million this year, you know, this past season. So, you can walk away and even if he retired, he doesn't have to give that money back because that was part of his fully guaranteed salary upfront money. That's one of the things help me out here. One of the worst contracts ever given out in football. Albert Haynesworth, right? Albert Haynesworth, $100 million, 7-year deal, but $40 million was fully guaranteed, non-refundable bonuses in the first 2 years. And that changed the game. That was the deal that changed the game because if you're, and not that he would walk away, but if you're Odell Beckham and you walk away now, you're done. Like what? I have no worries. I'm walking away. I've already made, I don't know whatever he makes as a first round pick plus this $21 million this year and whatever endorsements he got. Talking about being able to walk away from the game with $40 million after 5 seasons, after a 5-year career. So it's a big difference now. And Gronk was very well paid. I mean, tight end position doesn't necessarily pay as much as wide receiver, but he was making, $9, $10 million a year, for the last 3, 4, 5 years. So he gets to walk away with solid money. Why play? Especially for a guy with a broken, we're talking about broken arm, bad back, neck,
knee
everything.
Surgery, he had it all. Concussions. That's all serious. Those are serious things, and it's smart to walk away from the game when you can walk away from the game, and not to the point where the game destroys you so much that you suffer later on in life. And most of these young men, they suffer later. They suffer early in life. Football is a brutal sport.
It's brutal. Yeah. Hey man, I want to change gears real quick only because I didn't get a chance to ask you this question during the week, but what do you think about LeBron James finally missing the playoffs? Sorry, you were just talking about brutal, and I was just like,
listen,
that's
we knew that was possibly going to happen, right? And you're in the West Coast, you can't literally stomp all over like you was doing in the Eastern Conference. You ain't doing that in the Western Conference. You ain't doing it. And my thing is, when the Lakers, sorry, listeners, we're going to get back to Gronkowski in a second, but when the Lakers played the Knicks at Madison Square Garden, Mad Mike, and LeBron James separated himself from his team as they was in a huddle, come on, man, you're a leader. You're supposed to be a leader. Leaders don't do that. Leaders don't do that. And then Clyde Frazier came out and said something about it. Huh?
Wasn't that my rant last week?
Yeah. Clyde Frazier came out and said, you know Steven Jackson had the nerve to say, who is Clyde Frazier? Are you serious?
Well, that's it's funny because that's exactly, that's what this new age way of thinking is. Like, this media, they've allowed the media to turn the Knicks into a joke to the point where someone can feel like they can actually talk about that. And I am going to tell you that was one of my rant. That was going to be my rant, and I'll have to figure something else out.
No, save that because I want to hear it. No, save that. I want to hear that rant on that. But, my whole thing is, who the hell is Steven Jackson? Who the hell is Steven Jackson? But,
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not even going to save it. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, like you said, who is Steven Jackson? What is Steven Jackson's credentials? What has Steven Jackson done in the league to warrant being able to call out one of the greatest ball players the NBA has seen?
Hall of Famer?
Not one of the greatest.
Who's a Hall of Famer?
Not one of the greatest Knicks. One of the greatest players the league has ever seen. One of the greatest ambassadors. You want to talk about all these crazy suits that people get are wearing. He originated that. He made that cool. Think about that. Clyde, this is not, Clyde now is not doing it to remain relevant. Clyde has been doing this since day one. You kids are playing catch up. So when Steven Jackson feels like he can come, he's got to come and do that to come to LeBron James's defense. Give me a break. Well, LeBron James did. So Steven Jackson's one of the realest guys that was out there, right? He was part of the Detroit Melee, Ron Artest, Jermaine, whatever his name is. I'm drawing O'Neal.
Oh, Jermaine.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The bad boys in Indy, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. He's over here. Who is Clyde Frazier defending LeBron James? Will LeBron James have gotten away with that in that locker room?
Yeah, no, you're right. He wouldn't have.
No, right? So
and
don't give me that crap.
He's an NBA
now.
Analyst,
don't,
Matt
don't.
Mike, so he has every right to voice his opinion on something. You know, he wasn't out of character for saying what he said.
Nah, his opinion is bogus because he wouldn't have stood
for
that.
No, I'm talking about Clyde Frazier.
Oh, yeah.
On LeBron James. You're talking about Clyde Frazier on LeBron. You're talking about someone, we're Knicks fans, so we listen to Clyde Frazier talk all the time. And Clyde has given plenty of kudos to players that aren't wearing Knicks uniforms.
He says the same thing about the Knicks, man.
Exactly. Exactly. And all he's doing is giving you his perspective as a great basketball player that has played in this league. So come on, man. Steven Jackson, you make yourself look like a donkey doing that. Like a straight up donkey.
We can't say the word ass on this show?
I don't know. They say it on TV, don't they?
Well, call him an ass.
Well, you making yourself look like an ass. An ass. Yeah, I said it twice, man, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, buddy.
Thank you. Listen, we don't even got a rant now, see?
Yeah,
we got it out
the
way.
Let's go back to Gronk real quick before we move on to some Yankee news. And I just want to go over some of Gronkowski's notable accomplishments on the field. All right, in 2011, he set the NFL season record for touchdowns with 18 and receiving yards, 1327 by a tight end, and became the first tight end to lead the conference in scoring with 108 points. All right, between 2010 and 2012, he became the first tight end in NFL history with three straight 10-plus touchdown seasons. He led all tight ends in receiving yards for the fourth time in 2017, trailing only the great Tony Gonzalez and Shannon Sharp. Tony Gonzalez had 7, Shannon Sharp had 5 for the most seasons leading the league in receiving yards as a tight end. He became the only tight end in NFL history to post 3 seasons of 1,000-yard receiving and 10-plus touchdowns. He did that in 2011, 2014, and 2015. All right, he also reached 1,000 yards receiving for the fourth time in his career in 2017, tying again the great Tony Gonzalez and Jason Witten for the most 1,000-yard seasons, by a tight end in NFL history. Also, his 80 touchdowns, 79 receiving, 1 rushing are the most in Patriots history. Only Antonio Gates and Phillip Rivers have connected on more touchdowns between a tight end and quarterback in NFL history. Gronkowski got 78 with Tom Brady. And the last one is he recorded his 50th touchdown reception in his 59th game, which was 33 games earlier than the next fastest tight end. So congratulations to Rob Gronkowski on an excellent NFL career. And by far, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, man, Mike. He better be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
It's crazy when you really stop and think about it. It's really amazing the amount of talent when you consider the tight end position over the last, 10 years since he's been in the league. People forget Aaron Hernandez because of, the nonsense that he found himself embroiled in. But, when you look at Antonio Gates, like you mentioned, when you think of the Jimmy Grahams, when you think of, Julius Thomas had a few years there. The tight end position has absolutely exploded over the last 10 years. And you're looking at a guy who arguably we could say was among the best one, if not the best one. You know what I mean? So shout out to him and happy to see him go.
All right, so now let's move on to some New York Mets news before we get to the Yankees, man, Mike. It's pitcher Noah Syndergaard. He got honest with the media the other day, slamming the decision makers, you know, at his club over the apparent reluctance to sign Jacob DeGrom. So now you're speaking out about another player getting a contract extension. And he is also complaining about their travel itinerary as the Mets are forcing players to go to Syracuse before they go to Washington for their first game of the season. And his issues with DeGrom, you know, they come after the most recent, you know, word from the Cy Young Award winner himself, which makes it sound like the situation is bad for the Mets, man, Mike.
And well, DeGrom is
still under control with the Mets for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, the thing there is that people got to remember, or rather, you don't got to remember anything. Just don't forget, Brody Van Wagenen was Jacob DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard's agent. So now he's the Mets GM. Don't think for one second their status and their negotiations wasn't one of the reasons. I'm not saying it was the reason, but it was definitely one of the reasons why he got that job. Because they had to be able to navigate those waters. And when Noah Syndergaard comes out and says that, don't think for one second he's not doing it because of all the things that Brody Van Wagenen sold them as their agent. What they were going to get paid. How he was going to go about getting them their contracts. What year to anticipate getting their money. And DeGrom still at 30 years old doesn't have one. And you're asking him to go and be a horse, 220 innings, two and a half ERA, 200 strikeouts. You're asking him now as the GM to go and do all those things. And all they're saying is, hey, as my agent, you had already promised me these things. And now as a GM, you're saying, just go do your job and we'll take care of you at some point.
That is an excellent point, man, Mike. And it just goes to show the dysfunctionalism of this organization. And you know, it's tough because they still have 2 years of control over this young man, and maybe that's the reason why they're doing what they're doing. But you can't make your best player, because let's face it, DeGrom is the Mets' best player. Are you really going to make him a sourpuss? I don't think that's going to stop this young man from doing his job, though, man, Mike, but still.
No, you're right. It's not going to stop him from doing his job, but here's what it does stop him from doing. It does stop Jacob DeGrom from going into every interview after they blow a lead or they don't give him any run support. It's going to stop him from going in and saying, oh, well, just another day, good soldier, stay quiet, say, hey, we believe it's going to turn. No, now he's not going to do that. Now he's going to come out into those interviews, and he's not going to stay quiet anymore. He's now going to go in and he's going to criticize his teammates. He's going to criticize the front office. He's going to criticize everybody that played a role in him not getting his wins, because you can't use all these things against him in negotiations now when you basically said that none of those things mattered for how long. So watch, you'll see it. He'll go, he's going to do his job, but he's going to be more vocal about his anger after games, his disappointment in getting losses that he didn't deserve. You watch, it's going to become a crap show.
Do you think at some point he's going to request a trade from the Mets?
I don't think he will. Simply because he's going to be a free agent, and you're under more pressure to sign that extension if you get traded. And he's so close. Either he wants to be a Met, or I can see him saying, I wanna test the market and decide where I want to go. And the one thing the Mets, I know what the Mets are trying to do. When you say, hey, man, you know, older players aren't getting contracts. Well, I'll tell you one thing. Older pitchers are still getting paid. So you know, the Yankees are a proof of that with the J-Hap. You know, 3 years at $17 million per year. At 32 years old, you can still go and give him, you know, something of you know, he can still go get a five-year, $100 million deal with a couple options or something like that at 32 years old. He'll get it. I mean, Jay Happ is 36 and just signed a 3-year deal with the Yankees, taking him to 38, 39 years old. So DeGrom will still get a 6-year deal.
And that's crazy. If you look at it, Zach Greinke is making $35 million, I believe.
Yeah.
And there's no way in the hell you could tell me that Zach Greinke is better than Jacob DeGrom.
No. And guys are just getting their money for longer. I mean, CC Sabathia is still pitching. So if you're DeGrom, there's going to be money there. His thing is, it's not necessarily that he doesn't think he's going to get paid at 32. It's that Jacob DeGrom doesn't want to take a chance of getting injured at 31, 32, and then not being able to get paid. If you give him his money now, he's got his money. You know what I mean? He's taken care of. He's done.
All right, so
things to think about.
Let's see what. Listen, believe it or not, listeners, we're just 3 days away from opening day. 3 days. I'm excited about baseball, but let's move on to the other baseball team in New York, the New York Yankees, who set their 25-man opening day roster.
The 25.
Due to the injury of Aaron Hicks. There are some surprise additions to the roster. Most notable being a newly acquired outfielder who Mad Mike loves so much, Mike Tauchman. And on Sunday, the Yankees played their final Grapefruit League game. And before the game, they made their final roster cut of the spring. Just a day after the team acquired Mike Tauchman. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name. Never heard of the young man before. From the Colorado Rockies in exchange for left-handed pitcher Philip Dill. The team option utility outfielder Tyler Wade to AAA. Now, the news was somewhat surprising considering that Wade had enjoyed a pretty good spring training, man, Mike. After the injury to Hicks and the demotion to Clint Frazier. And I thought he seemed like a safe bet to make the team. However, since Wade is still relatively new to playing center field, and when I watched that game, he didn't look comfortable in center field.
But let's stop. He's not a center fielder. Yeah, that's what I don't understand. One of the reasons you brought back, and this is, I'm sorry to cut you off, but this is why it's BS, man. One of the reasons they sold you on why they were comfortable bringing back Brett Gardner instead of, looking around for better options on the corner outfield market was because Brett Gardner had the ability to play center field in case of injury, right? That's what they told us when they brought him back. That was one of the reasons. So don't tell me that this kid can't make this 25-man roster because he's not comfortable in center field, because he shouldn't even be asked to play center field. Brett Gardner should be shifted over to center field, and Clint Frazier shouldn't be sent down, or Giancarlo Stanton should be playing in left field. I'm tired of this. The Yankees think they're smarter than everybody. All they want to keep showing off is their analytics in their scouting department. They want to tell you how they found this kid, Tauchman, the same way they found Luke Voit. Well, I guarantee you, you're going to see all those little holes in Luke Voit's swing this year. You're going to see all those scouting reports that find his weakness. The same way he struggled in October when the pitching in matters and the pitching improves. I swear to you, you watch it, man. I'm so sick of seeing this. This is the one thing about Brian Cashman lately that I'm tired of seeing. Tired of it.
Now, to add insult to injury, which I'm sure Mad Mike is not going to be happy about this as well, listeners, the lefty-hitting Tauchman is coming off of a great season with the Rockies AAA club, where he hit .323 with 20 home runs and 81 RBIs in the Pacific Coast League.
How old is he? How old is he?
He's old. He's, what is he, 28?
How old is he? He's 28 years old, yeah. Right? What do 28-year-old career minor leaguers, what are they supposed to do to pitchers, to younger kids, 22, 23 years old, in the Pacific Coast League, one of the most hitter-friendly leagues in the minors. What is he supposed to do?
Yeah, now, listen, I'm sure this is going to agitate you even more, because from the Yankees front office, they're saying he can play all three outfield positions. He's a career 304 minor league hitter. But he is 28 years old, and they said he's never been given an extended look at the big league level. Now, he still may not get that opportunity with the Yanks. But somehow, some way, they see something. Clearly, they see something in him. And his situation seems similar to, like you said, somebody else, Luke Voit, when he was with the Cardinals before the Yankees acquired him prior to last year's trade deadline. I mean, could he possibly be another diamond in the rough? But outside of that, Mad Mike, Luke Voit and Greg Bird will be on the opening day roster. And Greg Bird, he certainly earned his spot with another terrific spring. But he had a terrific spring last year, and then crap the bed during the regular season. So we'll have to wait and see who gets the nod first this Thursday. I mean,
Greg Bird has ended spring training the last 2 years hurt. He's actually not made it out. He's come out on the DL both the last two spring trainings. The first year, after a great spring training, he breaks his ankle with a foul ball. And then last year, the recurring ankle injury after the first game where he was asked to play first base, he just couldn't make it out. So this is actually the first time that you're right, that he's going to make it out healthy after a great spring training. You just hope he was hit by a pitch. He had to miss the game for x-rays on the elbow. You kind of hope that doesn't play a role in any kind of slow start. This team needs Greg Bird. This team really, really, Lloyd, needs Greg Bird more than they need Luke Voit. And one of the reasons why is this team doesn't have any lefty power, any reliable lefty hitters with Didi Gregorius out. They just don't.
You're right.
Brett Gardner,
Can you trust Brett
Gardner?
You're right. He's the one guy that could bang, if he's healthy, he could bang out 20-plus home runs in a season.
Yeah.
Talking about Greg Bird, listeners.
Yeah, and with Aaron Hicks and his switch hitting on the DL to start the year, they really don't have any lefties.
He hasn't even started any baseball-related activities, talking about Hicks.
Nah, but we know that, man. We this is Hicks all the time, man. Every year. This is why I don't understand. That's why I was so upset this year. That's why I was so upset this offseason, because there was a clear need for upgrades. There was enough history, enough evidence to tell you what you had. Me and you could sit here. Joe was on a show. He could sit here and tell you Aaron Hicks is going to have one, two, three really, really, you know, just core muscle injuries. That's just what he does. If it's not the oblique, it's the ab. If it's not the ab, it's the back. And then you heard them. They said it's chronic back pain. We had Danilo Gallinari here. Chronic back pain never goes away.
They signed him to a 10-year deal?
7 years, $70 million deal.
And now he has, and you're just now knowing he has chronic back pain?
Correct, but like I said, if you're him, I'll give you the discount and you give me the years.
Right, yeah.
And if you're them, they're saying, all right, we want the discount.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how Brian Cashman, once again, Brian Cashman has operated from a true Yankee standpoint, as far as, you know, all right, these guys are on the market and I need upgrades. I can buy them. I can pay for them. He's trying to act like I'm smarter than you and I can find the better deals than you can. Well, you know what, man? Good for you. You cheaped us on the Paxton? Paxton has projected 168 innings this year. From your number two starter, 168 innings, Lloyd.
I mean, your Bulldogs give 200 plus.
168 innings.
168 is hot caca.
And it'd be a career high.
That's caca.
It would be a career high. So I'm just saying, I told you before, expect injuries and expect to need, you know, farm guys to come up and pitch big time games this year, big time innings, because they have we call it whatever we want. They just have an injury-prone staff, and you're already seeing it, man. You know, last year, Seve was hurt. He was tired. Shoulder was barking, and he kept pitching through it. This year, he can't even make it out of spring training. What does that tell you?
Yeah. And it's safe to assume that until Hicks return, that Bird and Voit are both going to get a lot of playing time. But I do think Bird is the better defender, and hopefully he'll get more time at first while Voit will be the DH.
He's a better hitter, man. He's a better player.
Said to be the primary left fielder. I don't know if I'm a big fan of that, Mad Mike. John Carlos Stanton playing left field.
Yankees have one of the biggest left fields in baseball.
That's tough.
And this guy, you could tell me, oh, he's a lot more comfortable now. No, he's not. Let's stop BSing us.
I've seen him in left field at Steinbrenner Stadium down in Florida, not looking good.
He's not a left fielder. I don't get it, man. I don't get it. You had guys there this year to upgrade. They were there, and you chose not to do it. And don't tell me the money, because Bryce Harper's making $25 million a year. He's making $25 million a year. Manny Machado, if you think about it, looks like a bargain after the Nolan Arenado deal. So you miscalculated. You did. And for those fans, and Lloyd, I don't know if you were one of them. I don't think you were. But for those fans that thought, all right, they're just saving their money for Mike Trout. Good luck.
Yeah. $430 million dollars later.
Yeah. So what does that tell you? That tells you that the New York Yankees severely misread the market. They misread the years on contracts, and they misread where the money was going. Because the money went to the 300 and 400 range. The money, the years went to the 10 and 12-year range. The money, or the years also took guys like Nolan Arenado, who was 37, who got an 8-year deal, a 7-year deal at 29 years old, with an option for the 8th year. That would take him to 37 years old. So you tell me. You thought that guys weren't going to be getting contracts into those years anymore. You're and right. Now here they are.
26-year-old guys, mind you, because Bryce Harper and Manny Machado were young. Mike Trout was young.
Bryce and Trout are going to, their contracts take them to 29, I believe. Because Trout takes him to a 12-year deal,
yeah,
right? 27?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's 27. So that's going to take him to 39. And Harper at 26 got 13 years, takes him to 39 as well, which means it tells you that the Yankees misplayed Manny Machado. Manny Machado's deal is only going to take him to 36.
Yeah. No, you're right. Watch. I bet you at the age of 36, the Yankees will sign him. Watch what I tell you.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you. It's not always good to be the "I told you so." I'm smarter than you. You know, sometimes you don't got to be the smartest guy in the room. Sometimes it's okay to be the jock. It's okay to be the guy that just goes and gets it done. You know what I mean? Like Brian Cashman has to stop. He has to get off the road.
And on the pitching side, Matt, Mike, the final bullpen spots went to Luis Sessa and Stephen Tarpley. I actually like Stephen Tarpley. They both at X-League Springs. And also, listeners and Yankee fans, Dellin Betances is set to start the year on the IL, and it opened up another spot for those guys. And what to make a break spring for Sessa? He led the team in innings. He had 17, which, I mean, this doesn't mean much, but it does mean something. So he pitched 17 innings, and he had an outstanding ERA of 0.63. And Tarpley, on the other hand, didn't allow a single run in 11 innings pitch. And, you know, he should serve as a valuable role this year as a left-handed specialist. I like Tarpley when he came up last year. I'm actually happy that he made the spot. You know, that he got a spot on the team. And even though CC was expected to start the season on the injured list, he was included on the roster, but only to serve his 5-game suspension to start the year. And once that's up, he'll go on the IL, and top prospect Jonathan Loaisiger will take his spot. Okay, Domingo Germán also made the club and will be the team's fourth starter in the rotation. And Germán will get a long look to make a strong impression with Severino out until the beginning of May at the earliest. If he and Loaisiger struggle early, you know, there's a good chance that we can see recently signed Gio Gonzalez, you know, take one of those rotation spots. But altogether, man, Mike, the Yankees are going to carry 13 pitchers and 12 position players with the 3-man bench of Austin Roman, DJ LeMahieu, and Tauchman, your boy. And the Yanks obviously won't be at full strength to the beginning of the season, but the roster they have, you know, set is still more good enough to help them get off to a strong start in April, in my opinion. Thank God we're playing the Baltimore Orioles. That doesn't mean we're going to win, but I mean, I guess I could be happy that we're starting off the season against the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, I'm so disgusted with a lot of it. But I guess this is the time you want to go through your injuries. You know, I don't know, man. I can't tell you. DJ LeMahieu, they're going, you just said he's an infielder, right? DJ LeMahieu has never played any position outside of second base. But the Yankees, for some reason, think that he can play, be the backup to all three positions, second, short,
how they're pitching it too, Mad Mike. Oh, he's going to be an everyday player. He's going to play some at third. He's going to play some at second. He's going to play some at first.
But he's never done it. And that's the part of the problem I have. That he's never done it. And what if Miguel Andujar's sophomore slump? What if Miguel Andujar's defense didn't improve the way they want to sell it? And I'm going to be very honest with you. The way they've been selling us a load of crap this entire offseason, I tend to not believe that he's going to be any good in the field this year. I don't think he's made any improvement. Say whatever you want. I'm being very honest with you. Simply off that fact, I'm going to tell you, I don't. I think they're full of crap. I think they sold us that just to make us feel better about not signing Manny Machado. I think that the kid is still just horse poop at third base. And you're going to sell me on, I don't know, man. I'm done.
But listen, Matt, Mike, you know the listeners. Look, I get so many text messages and Twitter messages and Instagram messages that the fans love Matt Mike's rant. And we can't just let the show go without a rant. And I know you was about to rant on Steven Jackson. But you got to get your rant on for today, brother, even if you double down on what you were saying. The fans love the rant. I love the rant. Let's get Mad Mike's rant for the week before we close this show out. Come on, Mad Mike. Hit us with one, baby.
Oh, man, yo. Steven, I gave it to you already, but I give it to you again. Steven Jackson has done absolutely nothing worth talking about in his career. Nothing as far as talking greatness. And for him to come out and just diss our very own, man, He didn't even diss him. He basically said, you're a nobody. Who are you? We don't know you. Kids, don't go do your homework. Don't go, you know, pay attention to a guy like Clyde Frazier. He never did anything in this league. Clyde Frazier is one of the greatest guards this league has ever seen. Clyde Frazier is talked about in the same circles as Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. And you're going to say something like that? He's a world champion. You can't even say that he was part of the Knicks when they were a joke. He's a world champion. Walt Clyde Frazier. Come on, man. If anything, Walt has actually garnered more respect and deserves more respect from this generation than LeBron James does, because he's never acted like a petulant baby. He's never thrown teammates under the bus. He's never openly tried to trade away half his team in the middle of the season. And I'm not even talking about this year. I'm talking about last year when they traded like 8 guys at the deadline because LeBron James wanted nothing to do with any of them anymore. And then he follows that up with the same demands this year. And then he goes and he sits away from his teammates as if he's not part of the problem, as if he's the only solution on the team. Steven Jackson, you're an ass. And we've determined whether or not we can say it or not. We determined on this show today that we can say it. You're an ass. Do your homework. And you should apologize. I'll issue a public apology.
And then you know what was more puzzling to me, Matt Mike, was that the other people that were on the panel, when he actually said this, nobody corrected him.
Why would they? We know what the media is about right now. The media and the NBA media right now is about keeping the New York Knicks a joke. Let me tell you something, and I'm not saying this as a New York Knicks fan. I say it's the same thing you see it in the NFL at times. You see it, you know those teams that people don't want them to be good. It's just like. They're scared to death for these guys to go to the Knicks. Nobody wants to have to talk about a good New York Knicks team. That's why they keep pushing Brooklyn down your throat. They don't want to respect the Knicks, whether it's Dolan, whether it's the front office, no matter what it is, how they treat the media, how they treat people. They want you. It's just like Charles Oakley. Are you treating a legend this way? Well, I mean, at some point, things got to change, right? People don't want it to change. They want to keep you thinking they're a joke. They're scared to death right now, Lloyd. They really are. Can you imagine Kyrie, Zion, Kevin Durant in one offseason? Come on, man. Everyone, they're scared right now, totally scared. That's why they say things like that about Walt Clyde Frazier, man.
Fair enough. And listeners, with that being said, that brings us to a close of this week's show. We have so much more to talk about in upcoming shows, but me and Mad Mike want to thank you for hanging out with us, sticking with us, supporting us, and we want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for doing the same thing. So listeners, please have a safe and blessed week. Hopefully you got your tournament brackets going so you can see if your overall record is better than me and Mad Mike's, but we'll continue this moving forward. So listeners, have a safe and blessed week, and me and Mad Mike can see you in 7 days. So Ayo, let's roll, baby!
And just like that, that brings our show to a close. All of you fine ladies and gentlemen, that have been listening, I thank you. If you subscribe, thank you. If not, please do so. And make sure you share it with your friends and your family, anybody that you know. But get into some sports talk. You got the best sports podcast, in my very humble opinion. The best sports podcast, the real sports and the real talk, right here with the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show. As you already know, episodes drop every single Monday. Head over to LloydAThompson.com. Follow on Instagram and Twitter at Lloyd A. Thompson. That's with two L's. Make sure you throw the second L in. And we'll catch y'all in a week. Peace.